Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters. Welcome to another episode of the LDM show. So today with brother Hamza, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum, bro.
Assalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullah. And we're going to be talking about the problem of evil, inshallah. So let's take it away, bro. What is the problem of evil?
Well, the problem of evil can be summarized in the following way. That there is a good, all-powerful God.
Okay.
There's too much evil, too much suffering. Therefore, there can't be a good or powerful God. That's the summary, the logical summary of the problem of evil.
Seems rational on the surface, right?
Well, it seems emotional on the surface, okay. Definitely. Right. But our job is not to be emotional. Yes. Our job is to be thinkers. As Allah says in the Quran, أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ. Do you not use your intellect? Do you not use your brain, your intellectual capacities? So when we scratch the surface, we see actually it's a joke of an argument, I think, I personally feel. The first thing I'd like to say is that if they claim that God can't exist because there's too much evil and suffering,
mm-hmm.
then we could switch it around and say, well, fine, let's accept for a moment that since there is too much evil and suffering in the world, then you can say a good, all-powerful God probably doesn't exist.
Okay.
I'll give you that as an argument. But if that's the case, then your philosophical method in coming to the conclusion that a good, all-powerful God can't exist...
Mm-hmm.
That philosophical method must now turn you to believe in God because of the design argument. Why? Because why do we believe in design? Because looking around the world is highly unlikely a cosmic designer doesn't exist. Do you see? It's highly likely a cosmic designer is an existence and did design this whole universe. So on the one hand, they use probability to reject God based upon the evil and suffering in the world.
Right.
Well, stick to probability, and then when you start looking at design in the universe, you're like, well, you know what? This, we should accept God or cosmic designer based
sure.
upon probability using the design argument, because it's highly likely a grand designer, if you like, exists based upon the design in the universe.
So what you're saying is be consistent. I mean,
be consistent. You can't have your cake and eat it.
Right.
You're using one philosophical method or one intellectual method to form a certain conclusion to reject God, but that very method makes you accept God with another argument, which is the design argument, because
sure.
essentially the problem of evil is what you would call a probabilistic argument.
Right.
It's not deductive, it's not, for example, it's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically saying it's highly unlikely a good all-powerful God exists.
Right. Fantastic. Okay, so let's move on to another point. Another thing that you can see here is when the atheist makes this argument is that they're assuming that objective evil exists, right? Isn't that
yes,
correct?
That's true.
So maybe elaborate a bit on that particular point.
Okay, well, just to be a bit more consistent, there are three ways in dealing with the problem of evil argument.
Mm.
The first way is by dealing with the first daring assumption, which they assume God is only good
mm.
and all-powerful, and that's it.
Right.
The second daring assumption is that God hasn't given us any good reasons of why he's permitted evil and suffering in the first place. And the third one is the point that you're talking about, which is, wait a minute, is this evil real?
Right.
Is this evil objective? Does it transcend human subjectivity?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. So let's work our way through these. So the first daring assumption is, God is only good and all-powerful.
Right.
But let me just think about here. Is God only good and all-powerful? Well, in what religion? I mean, if you look at Islam,
mm-hmm.
to claim that God is only good and all-powerful, well, that's not the God that we believe in.
Right.
This is a straw man. It's a logical fallacy. You've misrepresented God in the Islamic tradition.
So would you say that there's an attempt to superimpose the Christian narrative on the Islamic narrative as well?
Yeah, but to be fair to Christians as well, they also believe God is wise and loving,
okay.
and they do believe
the
some
attributes of God.
Yeah, they still believe some of these attributes of
okay.
God. I think what they're trying to do is they're simplifying the argument just for it to have power.
Right.
And that's intellectual dishonesty, I believe.
Right.
So coming back to the point, God is not only good and all-powerful, he's also the loving,
mm.
he's the compassionate, he's the wise, he's the subtle. So let's take the wise for example.
Mm.
We know that God is wise. So this follows that there is wisdom in what happens in the universe, because everything that happens in the universe is in line with his will,
right.
which his will is in line with his nature.
Mm-hmm.
Part of his nature is that he is wise.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there is wisdom. If there is wisdom, there is a reason.
Right.
So this gratuitous suffering that you're talking about, I don't understand why an iguana, for example, gets eaten up by another animal. I don't understand, for example, why that baby had to suffer cancer. You can't rationalize it, right? That's fair enough. But just because you can't see the wisdom, it doesn't mean the wisdom is not there. That's sure. another logical fallacy. It's called argumentum ad ignoratium. You're arguing from ignorance, mm-hmm. right? So what we believe is that God is the wise. So his wisdom is bigger than our wisdom, right? Greater than our wisdom. The way I like to put it is this way. We have the pixel. God has the picture.
That's what puts things into perspective.
It does. And that's frankly, and that deals with the whole argument. Now they may think, well, I don't believe God is all wise. Mm-hmm. Well, then that would be your opportunity to say, well, you know what? We believe in a book called the Quran, and we have good reasons to believe why this has come from the supernatural. This is from the divine. And he says he is the wise. Mm-hmm. So if we could show that God is wise, it actually crumbles the argument. That would be the first point. And we could see this in Surah Baqarah, chapter 2, verse 30, mm-hmm. when God talks to the angels, and the angels say, are you going to send someone down who's going to create bloodshed? Yeah? And God says, I know that which you do not know. No. Okay?
Wisdom.
Exactly, the wisdom. So the angels are just referring to their own previous experiences. They got limited knowledge, just like us human beings.
Sure.
You know, I saw the baby, he had cancer, but I don't understand why. Right? But God is saying, but I know, and you don't know.
You know, bro, there's another amazing story that you allude to is always the story of Khidr and Musa.
That's the point I was going to say now.
And that Excellent. Is such a profound story. I mean,
chapter 18, verse 66 onwards, Moses, upon whom be peace, he meets this man called Khidr.
Mm.
And Khidr does things that Moses doesn't like, saying, hey, you killed someone. Hey, you made a hole in a boat. Hey, you did this, you did that. Look at this evil. And then Khidr is saying, I told you, you want to have patience with me. And then Khidr explains why those actions happened. It was for a greater good. There was wisdom behind those things. So reflecting upon the Quran actually allows you to deal with the problem of evil. And that's why Ibn Taymiyyah, may God have mercy on him, he, in various works, Minhaj al-Sunnah and many other works, he actually deals with this from an Islamic perspective in the way that we're just talking about it now, that God has wise purposes for things and it's ultimately good. So it's all good, really.
Right, okay. So moving on to the second
assumption. Yeah, the second daring assumption is, well, they assume that God hasn't any good reason to permit evil and suffering.
Right. Okay.
But this is false. Any good reading of the Quran and the prophetic traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom be peace, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, we would see that there are so many spiritual tools and concepts in the Quran and the prophetic teachings that actually show us that God has given reasons to why there is evil and suffering. Well, the first point is, this is not paradise.
Right.
We're not here to party and boogie, right? We're here to be tested, as Allah says in the Quran, that he created life and death, right?
And the atheists, they need to understand this perspective, because when they approach it, they come at it from an angle that this life is all that exists.
Yes.
This is their paradise.
Of course.
So when they see evil, I guess it doesn't make sense to them, but from the, like you're saying, this Islamic perspective, first and most importantly, this life.
Well, I would even say that the problem of evil argument is an arrogant argument. It's actually compassion. It's actually arrogance dressed up in compassion.
Okay.
Because I'm telling you, let's be practical, existential here. Okay, Mr. So-and-so, atheist, secularist, whoever you are, you're so worried about the problem of evil, well, do something about it.
Right.
You know, and we know that, for example, according to the studies in sociology, that people who are religious actually give more than people who are irreligious.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the point? So let's do something about it. What it is a personal thing that they don't understand. My rationality can't fathom why these things are happening. But that's the whole point. Right. This is what you would call the crisis of arrogance. The crisis of, you know, we think we've progressed as human beings. And in essence, that perceived knowledge creates a spiritual arrogance in our hearts. So in a way, it's an arrogant issue. But the point, coming back to the point, God said he created life and death in order for us to be tested who's best in good deeds. So life is a test. Our purpose in life, according to the Quran, is that he created man and jinn, the sentient beings, إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, except to worship God, right? So that's our purpose, and worshipping God entails some kind of suffering. So it's through these things that we actually realize our purpose in life.
Right. We've addressed basically two of the core assumptions that are assumed there. Now, let's look at the final point, right? Now, does objective evil exist from the atheist worldview, the materialistic worldview? What would you say regarding that?
Well, this is interesting because in order to claim objectivity in values or morals, whether something is good or evil, it has to be grounded in something.
Right.
This is well known in philosophy of morality, and it's called moral ontology, okay? Mm-hmm. Your morals have to be grounded somewhere. If you believe, for example, that if I were to shoot you in the head, right?
Right.
An innocent Imran, shoot him in the head, we know objectively that's morally wrong. And what we mean by objective is, if the whole of Britain, for example, were to agree and say, no, it's morally right, it would still be morally wrong.
Right.
Okay, it transcends human subjectivity. And we see this, there is an ought pressing down on our lives, as Professor Ian Markham says. So from this perspective, this is objective, but that requires some kind of grounding. For it to be objective, how?
Because you just said it. It's something that transcends human subjectivity.
By necessity, by definition. Something objective, that's what it actually means. So it's not based on the inference of subjective feelings or even the subjective mind. It transcends that.
Okay, so let's look at that for a second. So how or what would an atheist ground his, or if he claims objective morality exists, what would he ground it in the absence of God, I guess? That's
well,
the point you're...
First, let's agree now that in order for morals to be objective, they have to be grounded in God.
Right, okay.
Because God is the only being concept that transcends human subjectivity, okay? So there are alternatives. The alternative is biology or evolution.
Right.
See, we're not saying here, for example, how we develop the capacity to develop moral behavior.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying, for example, how we can biologically reason how morals came into being. We're not interested in that. We're saying, morals, are they objective?
Right.
If they're objective, then can evolution be a grounding for that? We're saying no.
Right.
Why? Because evolution is, in a nutshell, a process over a lengthy period of time, and it's based on inevitable changes, based on maybe social and biological changes. So if those changes happen, then morals, one, lose their meaning, because, for example, love thy neighbor as thyself, as Professor Michael Ruhl says from the University of Guelph, is no different than picking your nose at a dinner table. It's social convention. It's just evolved. This is part of our social biological rearing from that perspective. So they lose meaning. And they're not objective because they're subject to changes, biological and social changes.
Right.
And that's why even Darwin, he wrote this in the 19th century. He basically, and I'm paraphrasing, that if we were to be reared like the beehives, we would think that it's okay to kill our fertile daughters.
So that doesn't make sense.
Of course, you're not going to accept
no,
that.
Of course not.
But some atheists who I respect, I'll take my hat off to, what's his name? His book is here somewhere. It's, there you go. Jay Mackey, the late Jay Mackey, Ethics. On his first page, what does he say? What does he say? Read it.
There are no objective values.
There are no objective values because he followed through concerning his moral view, his atheism. Now, you have the likes of Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and all these interesting human beings. They basically come with this rhetoric. And for me, it's what you would call sentimentalism. They're just being sentimental about the whole thing. You know, because if they do believe in a naturalistic paradigm, we're just nature, we're just atoms, and we're just molecules, then if we're just matter, then it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
Why are you being sentimental about certain things?
Right, so to conclude, just to sum up what you're basically
saying. Well, yeah, it can't be evolution biology.
Right,
the other option is society, right?
Okay.
Human beings coming together, the social consensus, and saying, this is objective.
Sure.
Well, we know that's problematic straight away. Look at all different cultures that have agreed on something that is morally wrong.
Yes.
Take Nazi Germany in the 1940s, for example. They said it's morally okay to kill innocent human beings, namely the Jews, right? And we know that's objectively morally wrong. So society can't be the basis for objective morals.
Sure.
There is a final one that they try to wiggle their way through. It's called moral realism.
Right.
And moral realism is basically saying, you know what? Morals are objective because they are.
Okay.
But then we could, well, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it. Then I could say, the Quran is from God, because it
just
is.
Yeah.
And the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom he peace, is the final prophet, because he
just
is.
Yeah.
That's not intellectual activity,
sure.
That's a cop-out in my opinion.
So, okay, to sum up things, so...
So therefore, if morality is, if good or evil can only be objective with the existence of God, because he grounds objective morals and objective good and evil, because he's the only concept that transcends human subjectivity. Therefore, the person who claims the problem of evil in his claim assumes God but rejects him at the same time.
Sure.
Because to say this is evil and suffering objectively,
you have to accept God in the
you have to have God for that to be objectively evil and suffering.
Sure.
But you're using evil and suffering to reject God in the first place, but you need it for that to exist in the first place.
Right. So it doesn't make sense from any angle, really.
No, they're very silly.